back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line, if you want to be in touch with the program, you know how to use it, 251-343-0106. That's how you do so. Still come on the program, our monthly visit with Andrew Sorrell, our state auditor, and then it is Tuesday, so John Wall, the Alabama Republican Party chairman, will be with us as well. But joining us now, he represents, I guess it's a portion of East Montgomery, other parts, but State Representative Philip Ensler joins us on the line. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well and appreciate you having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on. That's a rare opportunity for me to have a Democrat lawmaker on, and I ask the Republican lawmakers this all the time. I mean, it's a real kind of a rough session for a lot of them, and I know they got a lot of things passed that you probably disagree with, but what was it like from your perspective? Like, was it a bumpy ride, or is every session sort of a bumpy ride? Well, I guess we've been through two, but have they been a bumpy ride?
Yeah, look, I expect session to be a up and down time. There's certainly bills that passed that I didn't agree with or that our caucus didn't agree with. But overall, I think Speaker Ledbetter has done a great job leading the House. I know on our side, there was a lot of support on our side, meaning the House side, a lot of support for gaming and gambling. There was disappointment overall that didn't end up getting passed. But look, I think session is, I expected it to be a turbulent time. It's good to have a little break and good to then gear up for next session.
Oh, it's interesting to hear that. Well, obviously we're on to talk about Glock switches, and we'll start off here and kind of walk us through your bill generally, the specifics, penalties, and so on and so forth.
Sure. And so I, for your listeners who don't know, got elected in 22. So I've been in just for a few years, but during the campaign and since the time I've been on, I've heard from law enforcement in Montgomery, our sheriff, Montgomery police, others throughout the state who have said that they're increasingly finding these Glock switches or trigger activators attached to pistols. And that what's happening is they're turning them over to the U.S. attorneys, they're turning them over to the federal government. But what they want is a state level offense, where they can have the cases prosecuted by district attorneys in Alabama. Because the caseload was getting so large, they wanted to be able to essentially kind of share it between the federal government and the state government. So that's really where the idea originated. So I've introduced a bill for a few years now, and what it does is make it illegal to have a pistol that's converted into a machine gun. So again, using one of those Glock switches or conversion devices, there are kind of a few terms that are used. The penalty for it would be a Class C felony. And that was, what was recommended and what law enforcement and district attorneys were supportive of. And that's why we went with that.
Well, let me ask you this, as it pertains to that. So the thing that keeps coming up, there's already a federal law out there that handles this. Talk about how that works and what you want to do would work in concert with that, or is it duplication? Exactly how would that work?
Sure. So right now, if, say, the sheriffs in Mobile or the, a police officer up in Huntsville or, anywhere in between, if they find one of these devices, what the best they can do is to turn it over to the federal government to then decide if it's prosecuted and for the U.S. government to decide how they prosecute it. That indictment process, that prosecution process can take a long time. So what this will do is a free up and empower district attorneys in Alabama to press charges themselves. And they can do that probably a little bit more quickly than, say, the federal government can. But it'll certainly then be up to the discretion of law enforcement. Do they turn it over to the feds, or do they keep it on the state level? So all it is another accountability piece. It's a way to say, look, we want to deter some of these killing machines, some of these devices, but we also then want to hold people accountable or make sure that there's another mechanism to hold them accountable should law enforcement find it. You know, and let me say this, that it's, you know, big picture, this is just one small piece of to improve public safety. I think it starts with supporting our police departments. It supports, starts with making sure that we're supporting retention and recruitment efforts. So I'm not going to sit here and fix all of these issues, but at least I'll add on to is that we do this all the time. There are plenty of things that are illegal or in Alabama. We're elected to enact things on the state level, so we very much should act.
How widespread do you think this is? I'm very sure that there are already really opened a lot of people's eyes to this. But how many of these like devices are how many of these are in use? How widespread of a problem is it in Alabama?
Yeah, so in especially our larger cities, it certainly is more of a problem. The reports I've gotten from law enforcement are that there are probably at least a few hundred of these devices out there, and therefore potential cases every year. I think there was a analysis done from Automobile a couple of years ago that said it was like a 300-400% increase, at least in the number of devices that law enforcement found. So really in the last few years, they've proliferated. And the reason for that is that they're really easy to make. They're really cheap. So a lot of people are getting their hands on them. And that's why law enforcement is just having an even tougher time, trying to crack down on it.
Well, what occurs to me, and then maybe this is in your law and I'm just not aware of it. I haven't read it, or your bill, I should say. What about the people who manufacture these? Now, is somebody with a 3D printer in a basement somewhere, or I don't know how these things are made or how you get one, but it would occur to me that, like, what would be the penalty for manufacturing these devices? Wouldn't that maybe serve as a deterrent as well?
Yeah, great question. The federal law covers that right now. And the idea is that the U.S. attorneys, the federal government can go after the bigger fish. So go after the manufacturers, go after those who are dealing those. The state level offense would deal more on an individual level, with those who are making the choice, to then possess those. And the idea would be if state district attorneys can handle more of the individual cases, the federal government, it frees up some resources for them to go after those that are manufacturing these and really, spreading these out into communities and into the state.
I mean, do you think they're being made in Alabama, or do you have any sense of where these things are coming from?
It's a great question. I mean, they could be made in Alabama, but also they could be coming from overseas. They could be coming from outside of the country. And that's why, we have to take an all hands on deck approach to make sure that we're addressing, if they are coming from out of state or out of country, make sure that we're going after the source. But then to the extent that they are making their way in, making sure that there is just one other way to deal with it in Alabama, is really important. And look, what I've heard from law enforcement is that, and seen firsthand through demonstrations is that once these are fired, the bullets spray everywhere. They're really dangerous. So this isn't about self-protection. We certainly want people to be able to protect themselves, to be able to, have their Second Amendment rights, to have a firearm. But what we want to do is say, for law enforcement that are increasingly now at risk because they may encounter someone with these really, really dangerous devices that they don't know how to use, that we want to make it a little bit safer, especially for law enforcement.
And I've heard people talk about these, Representative, and just how hard it is to control the actual firearm when one's attached to it. And maybe that's it. Maybe your colleagues don't realize this, but you get the whatever the performance objective is, but it's just like you're just swinging wildly away, putting a lot of people in harm's way.
Exactly. And the Montgomery Sheriff did a demonstration here a couple weeks ago where they had one of their, they had an ATF, arms expert, do a demonstration and he filed fired a regular pistol, hit the target spot on over and over again. and tried firing one that had a switch on it, and the bullets just went in every which direction. They barely hit the target. And that's why they are so dangerous, because they can then get bystanders. You know, if someone, especially who's not a trained expert, is firing one of these and they're in a car driving by, or they're, you know, holding it with one hand, it just puts people, innocent people and bystanders at even a greater risk.
We're joined by State Representative Philip Insler of Montgomery here on the program. I spend a lot of time talking about the problems in Montgomery and Birmingham on a Mobile show, probably to the chagrin of some of my listeners. But, Representative, and since this is sort of your home base, I mean, Montgomery is certainly, during session, I'm up there once a week, probably during football season. We stay in Montgomery before we go to Auburn. I'm there enough. And it doesn't feel as safe as it once had. What do you, I mean, just from your ground level perspective there, what do you think is the problem there? What do you think needs to be done?
Sure. No, and look, public safety is the biggest issue that I hear about in my district. And it doesn't matter if it's white residents, black residents, upper middle class, working class. It's something that all people want to have safe neighborhoods. I am really glad and give a lot of credit to the crime suppression unit that in the last few months, especially this summer, has been a partnership of Montgomery Police, of the sheriffs, the attorney general's office, ALEA. That has shown results. And I think making sure that we continue to focus on in Montgomery, recruiting and retaining a strong police department, and also though having those kind of partnerships, between the city and the state, has shown the results, and we need to continue to do that. I will add in that when it comes to public safety, and I hear this from residents, no matter their political background, a lot of them think that it does start at home. It starts with families raising their children to make good decisions, and that's something that no city or government or police department can control. But to the extent that government can take action, there are things also that we can do more of. I work a lot with young people to try to, steer them in the right direction. And as far as conflict resolution, having that skill set, that's kind of on the early end. But then making sure that we have a police, force that's supported and able to do their job well. And that's why, I've introduced this bill over and over again, is because I've heard from law enforcement that it's just one tool in the toolbox of being able to crack down on crime.
What do you think of the, the gang problem? It seems like there's a reluctance to even acknowledge it in some places. And maybe it's not quite it's more of a Birmingham phenomenon than a Montgomery phenomenon. But I mean, like we saw at Dadeville, I'm sure you're familiar with all these instances where it looks like it was gang related. This just seems like something that's happened here lately, Representative, where it's sort of increased or whatever, really showed up on our radar more.
Sure, no, and I'm not privy to what the police department or law enforcement may identify as gangs or not, but I know that if there are gangs or not, if there are, there are. We should acknowledge that. And should make sure that we go after that. It's interesting. Someone once said to me that, when it comes to crime, that you always have to think about how it has impacted those that have been victimized, those that have been impacted, those that have lost someone. And I think the more we humanize it, the more that we talk about, well, if someone has lost a family member to a gang member, or they have lost a loved one to gun violence or to a crime, making sure that we approach it, with that heartfelt sense, is really important.
Lastly, it sounds like Montgomery's trending in a better direction than it was, say, 6 months ago, when you had that innocent bystander out of Atlanta Highway in that incident. But Sarah Barfoot, your colleague Reed Ingram, talking about a takeover of police departments, and it seems like a lot of Republicans are kind of cool to that idea. They're not really big on that. What do you think at some level of the state's involvement there, especially in your hometown?
Sure. Yeah. And I do not support that bill. And you know, here's why. I think that partnerships like the one we see now between the state and the city are effective. That has increased morale. But we elect mayors and you know, city councils to then make those local decisions about hiring a police chief and, you know, budgets. So I think keeping that, you know, within our cities, it's a very heavy-handed, top-down approach to have the state get involved in that sense. But I do think, and I look forward to the state, I think there are other ways we can support, you know, whether it is through, you know, additional funding, whether it is through additional resources, you know, supporting local police departments that may be having a tough time. I think that kind of partnership effort is much better than kind of forcing or mandating something.
Well, Representative, you've been very generous with your time. And I, like I said, I appreciate you making time for us, and maybe we can talk again soon.
Absolutely no. And look, let me say this, that, you know, it is a healthy and good thing that there are different viewpoints at times. And, you know, I think coming on your show and having this conversation is meaningful. So I appreciate you having me on.
Anytime. Thanks for making time for us. State Representative Philip Ensler there. We got to get a break. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Life.